Hey, welcome to our first podcast for 99 FinTech. Really glad you're here. We'll try to make this fun, interesting, not dry. As we do this, we'll talk about some things that are happening in the FinTech and world of things like payments and lending and RegTech. And we'll also tell you a little bit about us. We have fun things. So hopefully you'll enjoy hearing that too. With me today, Gary Stein.
Hey, Brian.
Yeah, I'm in the audience, Gary.
I'm excited and honored to be on episode 1.
Well, let's talk a little bit about the news. There's some interesting things happening this week. CFPB came out and, it's kind of like Groundhog Day. They stuck their head up and this time they had something to actually to say and they didn't go back in their hole. And now everybody's trying to figure out what it means. So let's talk a little bit about what they said. Why don't you share your perspectives on what they said as well?
Sure, sure. I will say, look, anybody following the CFPB know that they have not been shy about poking their heads out of the hole and, declaring things to the industry. I think Director Chopra's definitely got, the fintech, the banking community, certainly debt collection, the NCRAs. He got everybody's attention. And so it's just a matter of waiting. But, this was great. This actually, the Bureau issued a report on BNPL. And I got to say, even though I've been away from the Bureau for a couple of years, I feel, some tinge of, pride of ownership, only in the sense that when you and I met and we started talking about OpenPay, I was leading the team that was working on unsecured lending and BNPL and point of sale, and I met with all of them. And the surveillance of this industry is really dates back to certainly when I was at the Bureau and longer. But I think everybody from a timeline perspective is probably looking back to about the earliest part of this year when the Bureau issued a 10, I'm already forgetting my Dodd-Frank section numbers, but basically a mandatory data collection to a bunch of the BNPL lenders. Right. And, there's always this question of, okay, we can ask for data. Where are they going with this? And, yesterday they published an 83-page report that shows that they weren't just making noise, but trying to do something with the data. And they had a couple of themes, or two or three themes in that report. They published a lot on, what they could gather together from aggregated sources about trends in the industry. The growth has been pretty phenomenal, as you and I know. Delinquencies increasing. They have some good data on that. And they also talked a little bit about, loan amounts and other things they could glean. Director Chopra raised, I think, three concerns related to the BNPL market. And let's be clear here. Once again, in this document, they reinforced the definition of BNPL, I think, as pay in four. So these are loans that are very short-term in nature. I think they said the average dollar amount they looked at maybe went up from 115 to 130, but still very low.
And you think they're going to stick with that definition, even though that's what they came out the gate with?
Well, I want to come back to that. But there are no fees except for occasional. I won't say occasional because I don't think they use that word. But no fees except for late fees that may be charged to consumers. Funded, at least on the surface by merchant discount rates, which they said are hovering in the 2-4% range. And so they likened these products to layaway plans. They likened it to the early Diners Club, and they likened it to, which I thought was, let's say, creative on their part, late night infomercials of buying things in 4 easy payments. But they raised a few issues, and anybody reading closely could see some of these things probably in the NCLC's comment letter. One was, an unevenness of protections, not only across this space, because there is no clear standard, but also compared to substitute products like credit cards. And so they pointed to things like dispute resolution rights, and they pointed to things like disclosures of costs and terms and other things there, which is interesting because I think in addition to the free costs of some of those, a lot of the reason people want point of sale lending is because credit cards don't work for them. So it would be sad irony if this product becomes the same as credit
becoming card. A credit card.
Yeah,
it's a mini card, you know. Yeah.
But I see what they're talking about. The second thing was they talked about interesting data surveillance. And, you know, one of the things that we looked at a lot when we were at the Bureau was not just what was the idea, but the sustainability of the model. I think you and I and our colleagues are both very proud of what we built at OPI, that we had very sustainable net transaction margins of 2%. This was all reported publicly, high revenue yields, and something that was a very clear and strong path to profitability. And by the way, this report suggests that our metrics were twice as good, at least, as others that were in the marketplace. So you're looking at that. You're looking at this competition in the merchant discount rate, no fees except for late fees to consumers. And they're like, you know, where's the money coming from? And I think between that and getting insight, they honed in on data surveillance. So whether it is, you know, monetizing data by selling your data, but really these sites, they alleged, with the apps are becoming more like virtual malls, and they're getting rent paid. And so, oh, Brian just bought this with this lender. Maybe he's a good candidate for something else. And I think they raised concerns about the transparency and privacy.
But isn't that sort of, I mean, aren't you forced to look for new revenue streams if you're a permanent loss maker, some of these are? There's no path to profitability.
Absolutely. I think there's two things there. One is that it's all well and good for a consumer to, like, hey, you can use this for free, but we are going to take a blood sample and do your 24andMe or whatever, and you know everything about you. Like, if there's a very, and this is an issue, by the way, in data aggregation in 1033, the consumer might make an exchange of data and privacy for services, but if that's not transparent, then does the consumer really know if they're getting a good value? And by the way, in today's, the power of these companies to use information, I'm not saying it's used nefariously or egregiously, but it'd be impossible for a consumer to say, okay, I'll tell you my, who would have thought 15 years ago, if you told a company your pet's name, that it would end up becoming the most popular security question, and that would probably, you know, make you vulnerable to anything. So who knows what they're giving up? But
do you want to let them give it up, even if they're willing to? Let's just take selling a body part, right? It's not far off from selling your identity. Here's my finger. You need a finger? I need $100,000.
Right.
Do we let people do these kinds of things that we know are?
I think this is a really challenging question to solve.
By the way, I got 10. If anybody out there.
Well, I have. I actually have 9.5. Okay.
You already sold some.
I did not get good money when I was 3 years old for that, to be honest with you. But this is, we used to say, or at least I used to say in the Bureau, I stole this from Veep. You know, these are challenging questions. This is why we get paid the medium-sized bucks, because it is hard to figure that out. And for a consumer, even if you tell them, can they really internalize? You don't want to be paternalistic and say we have to babysit consumers. But you also have to realize that if industry knows what they're going to do with this information and how valuable it is, and the consumer doesn't, it's not really a fair value exchange. And if it was you and me, okay, we're two individuals, you know, it's free market. But when you have big, powerful entity and little consumer, and that's part of why the CFPB is there. The other element of that goes to the third point that the Bureau emphasized, and that is this idea of overextension. And they are concerned about that data and consumers taking on too much debt. Now, that is a bit of a paternalistic view, but there's a lot of economic metrics on that. And if I'm using it because, oh my God, Brian will buy anything with a pink unicorn on it, and, you know, and I can just keep selling stuff to you or something like that, then there's concern about that. And what's interesting about that is they had two flavors. One was this idea of overextension by you and the unicorn and just buying things over. The other was one of loan stacking. And That was interesting because I recently met with one of the large
Maybe quickly talk about that, how, you know, cards are used for other loans, because some people listening may not know about
well,
stacking.
Well, there's two elements. That's a great point. One of them is that, okay, you could have a debt to pay a debt, what Brian's talking about. And so, you know, I'm going to take out this loan and use my credit card as a method of repayment. And right. Now I could incur theoretically penalties on both if I default on the underlying credit. Just like if I use a debit card, I could have an overdraft and have a unhidden or hidden cost to finance. But the other is, I think the Bureau is still trying to understand or is concerned about the future where you have loans with 10 of these different lenders, you know, let alone the fact of your ability to manage credit, you know, when we have this, you know, such differentiated offerings, but how can the rest of the world understand your debt load and how right. successful are you going to be?
The and full that's picture, they, the full yeah. picture. And then, of course, you've got universal default and things that have been challenged in the past. By yeah. the way, I like to call that side stacking versus stacking.
Okay.
The stacking, the way I look at stacking is, yeah, you're layering for the same thing, right. debt on top of debt. Side stacking, you're just loading up on debt.
Yeah.
And obviously, it could mean you're getting ready for bust out. It could mean there's a lot of things it could mean.
Right, that's right.
But how does the industry get a comprehensive picture of somebody's risk when we know that historically, with things like universal default, you can't hold somebody accountable to things they might have done wrong somewhere else necessarily?
Yeah.
Although if you go through the bureaus, conceptually, you're supposed to be able to use bureau data to right. get that, but it doesn't quite work, particularly if something's off the radar like BNPL, right?
Well, it is now. And I do believe that all the players aspire to, you know, to furnish. And, you know, I will say this.
Hold on. You said something really interesting. I think this is important because the data is not really accumulated because they're not all furnishing yet. So let's just help people understand yeah. that. So the decision was made that data will be collected, but it's like a garden that hasn't really been, all the seeds haven't really started to grow yet, right? The data yeah. is not accumulated enough. Talk a little bit about that real quick.
Yeah,
I think
yeah,
that's really
yeah.
interesting.
And this is important because I think this has been, we do have this gap in the ecosystem right now. And it doesn't just affect buy now, pay later, buyers, investors, anybody connected with that. If you're an auto lender or a mortgage lender and you can't see somebody's full debt load or their repayment behaviors, that's a question. And so the Bureau has been big on that. I would say that, you know, from all of our talkings with our former frenemies, maybe soon to be best friends, in the marketplace, you know, I think there is a very earnest intention, expectation, things in the works for, you know, to furnish and to fill that ecosystem gap and to bridge that. You know, there's a couple of things though. Furnishing is not as easy as it sounds. Like, I'll just send a data file because, you know, the accuracy and all the other things and the dispute that's come with it, you know, is burdensome. But the second thing is the bureaus have to be able to ingest that information and use it in a way that, you know, rewards and I won't say punishes, but motivates people to use good repayment behaviors. And so, you know, it's not that easy. You're talking about a product that if it's our Australian mates would say is repaid fortnightly, we would say biweekly, you know, and your whole reporting ecosystem is built on monthly repayment. You've got to map that over. These are very small dollar loans and, you know, that are now increasingly being used by a broader spectrum of the population, but may have initially been used by thin file or folks that couldn't get alternative credit or struggled with the credit card.
So the models start to be biased early
exactly.
on.
Right.
And then maybe in 5-10 years, the garden's grown and now you've got the right sampling.
Right.
And so you create problems probably when you're early on, and then you get something much more useful later.
That's right.
How do you get around that, though? I mean, you know, you got to start somewhere.
So I think there's a few ways. I mean, they have pretty smart data scientists at these bureaus. And I think, you know, we had one of our former colleagues that's worked at a couple of them and has pushed them. And it's, you know, it's incumbent upon the lenders to say, listen, we're helping people. We want people to use credit responsibly and to push and to make sure that I don't think any lender out there wants their product to be considered a derogatory product. And so they have to be looking for it that way. You know, so I do think it's a matter of there's a lift to furnish and to manage that furnishing and then the ingestion and the utilization of that. And you need enough data, you know, that's right. The other thing, even if the intent's all there, you need enough data to figure out how that works. I will say this though. I was at an event recently with hosted by one of the major bureaus, and they had a pretty good, while nobody's fully furnishing yet, I don't think, many of the lenders are using this NCRA on the inquiry side. You know, they're checking their credit just as we did when we checked Vantage scores. Right. And they can see, they have the ability to see Consumer X, Brian Schneiderman, you know, whether he is applying for credit with, say, Afterpay or Afterpay and Klarna or Afterpay and Klarna and Affirm. And I thought it was very interesting. By their surveillance, we are not yet really seeing much side stacking, to use your the word. I like that. We're seeing brand loyalty. And some of that is funny for some of the issues that we wrestled with on a consumer experience standpoint, because you download an app, you got that app, and that's the app that you want to use. And we could have a whole nother conversation about web-based services and apps as a consumer. So we're not seeing that yet. But the Bureau, back to the original point, the Bureau is very concerned about, you know, this shadow debt ecosystem and what it's going to do. The good news is, if you're buying T-shirts and tennis shoes, $100 purchases, burritos for $8, not a lot of debt is going to aggregate. And so, you know, I thought Director Chopra was actually perhaps more measured in his remarks than maybe some other statements that had come out and talked about not labeling these products as good as bad. But if you think about it, yes, it's a very fast-growing market. Adoption and dollar, but with low transactions, this ability to do this, like, you know, you hear stories from the UK and Australia and some of them that have been documented here with consumers and overextension. But the good news is it's designed to start small. And so, you know, I think it's worked out that we have an industry trying to figure out the right formula and not take too big a chunk out of any one individual on the way. So,
well, that's great. Well, with that, let's transition. I want to go to some of the calls. I think there's actually some questions here that have been posted. I'm going to go ahead and go through a couple of those. One of the first ones has to do with our opinions on Web3 and whether we think that Web3 is coming soon, in a material way, or if it's years off. Any thoughts on that?
I'll let you take. Why don't you take the first stab at that?
I love it. You've been stumped by one of our first callers. The answer is 3.5 years. Okay, let's go to the next question. The next question has to do with, here's one. Are we hiring? Thank you for that question. Look, we are always looking for great people. And we really like people that have been in fintech, but have also been in advisory and consulting. The combination of the two, it's not that you can't be good if you have one of those. We find, and our value proposition is very rich, when we can go to a client and say, we've been there, we've done that. And so, yes, if you're interested, feel free, you can reach out on LinkedIn. And we'd be happy to look at your background and talk to you if there's a good fit.
I'd like to add something to that. Yeah, not only do we want smart, bright people? But we're building a diverse set of capabilities. You know, we've met with some other firms, very esteemed firms, and they've got really deep expertise in specific areas like compliance or risk. And what we're building here is an ability to turbocharge a fintech or a PE company's investment, or a bank that's looking to generate a new line of business, and not just say, hey, we can just take this little corner of it, but fill the gap wherever they have it. And so, you know, yeah, do they need to build out the risk framework? Do they need to build together a compliance management system and know how to navigate, you know, licensing and all this? Or are they looking for partnerships and maybe acquisitions on the M&A side? You know, do they have operational bandwidth, or are they looking for someone to help staff an initial call center of extreme specialists so they don't dilute their call center that's already serving their, you know, cash cow products and things like that, and to get that stood up? And so, you know, if you
we do all that.
And if so, if you have a skill, hey, I do this for fintechs, or I could do this. It doesn't matter. There is no slot
we're looking for.
We need it. Yep.
We need it. Absolutely. Great. This next one, I think, is a really great question. This one is for you, Gary, again.
On Web3? All right.
This question for you, Gary, says, why are you still looking like a corporate with your collared shirt and not looking fintech like Brian with his black t-shirt? Any comments on that?
You know, that's a great question. My closet is full of black t-shirts and hoodies. All of them are in the wash, though, and so I had to get a golf shirt.
All right, great. So looks like that's all the time we have for today. I'm looking forward to continuing these and inviting some of you to join us on future podcasts. If you'd like to, simply reach out again through LinkedIn is great, or you can send us an email. But we would love to feature stories and things that you're interested in. I know many of you are very focused on real-time payments, FedNow, real-time gross settlement. Gary and I have lots to say about that, since we both were involved with the Federal Reserve Task Force and the Steering Committee for the Federal Reserve for many, many years. We'd love to chat with you about that. Love to chat with you about crypto, about Web3, Gary's favorite topic. And thank you for listening. Thank you for joining us, everyone.
Thank you.